Serve It Cold, episode 19. Written by Ronnie Blackwell, presented by Dancing Cat Studios. TNT Auto, Tom speaking.
Well, hey there, Pete. How you been? Petey's out in the bay under an old Ford Pinto fighting with a motor mount, last I seen him. I'll get him for you in just a minute, but you'll never guess who came by here today. You went to school with Johnny Speed, didn't you? Yeah, that's him. He remembers some pretty funny stories about you, too. Well now, you would think that Johnny'd come in for that old blue van of his. But no, I see him park and I come out to say hello, and what do you know? He ain't come in about that study he got in second gear at all, but to ask about a stolen car the cops towed out of here yesterday. Petey might have told you all about it. Yeah, all kinds of excitement. Then Johnny says, "Whose hot rod is that sitting over there?" "Well, that's Petey's," I say. "Pete Saunders' boy." "He got a Louisiana license plate?" he asks. "Well, of course I know Petey don't, Pete, and that's what I told Johnny." Turns out the fella that stole that vehicle got towed, switched license plates with Petey, and Petey never even noticed. Yeah. You make sure to act all surprised when Petey tells you about it now, you hear? Yeah, Butch Ellis come to write up a report, and the three of us got to John. Car thieving is the least of this fella's sins. Drugs, kidnapping, assault. Might even be mixed up in that shooting out in West Catherine. Well, what do you expect from a Cajun? Oh, hey, Petey's heading this way. Don't let on I told you about the plate. Should be good for a month of ribbon.
Hey, Petey! It's your daddy!
After the second large parking lot, Narlene was beginning to tire of the game.
So why would Ray park the stolen car here anyway?
He probably wouldn't, and probably didn't. I expect he drove the thing to the French Quarter and abandoned it on the street. But we won't know if he left it here unless we look at all of these cars, right? How do you like the detecting so far?
Well, it's better than Trig.
It's better than watching Goat obsess over which lampshade to buy.
I want it noted that I did not say that Goat should leave the decorating to his gay bar manager.
I'm touched by your sensitivity and restraint, Johnny C.
Damn straight.
By 11:30, we had all become world-class Blue Stratus spotters. A talent we all agreed should be given a prominent spot on our resumes. We met Vera for lunch at the Mandarin House, home to Mississippi's finest hot and sour soup. Brenda had my Diet Coke and Vera's sweet tea at our places before we could get to the table. After the two newbies ordered, Narlene regaled Vera with the story of my exploits as I sat modest, sensitive, and restrained. My bowl of hot and sour assisted me in this task. There was a pause, and Sonny asked,
"Okay, Johnny C., I give. How in the hell did you know that car tag was gonna be there? You drove straight to the damn thing. How did you do it?"
"Oh, Grasshopper, I thought you would never ask."
"Sonny, don't you dare feed his already overgrown ego. I'm sure it wasn't all that inspired a thing after all. Narlene, was the car way at the back side of the parking lot? Did it have a for sale sign in the window, or was it maybe an employee's car?" "That's right, it was an employee's car. That's exactly right. How did you know, Vera?"
"Vera," I pleaded, "it's magic. Don't expose the ugly wires, you'll ruin the illusion."
"Jonathan Speed, you're the only ruined one around here. spoiled rotten and high as a kite from playing detective.
Okay. Now, I see that there are two Miss Cleos in the family, but I still don't see how you do it.
Vera shot me a glance that stopped my fork in mid-hoist. I took a sip of soda. Okay, Sonny, just break it down. If you had a hot car and wanted to swap the tag with another car, you would go where there are parked cars, right? So you go to a mall or big shopping center where there's lots of cars. But you don't park in front of the grocery store and start fiddling with other people's tags. You go to the back side of the shopping center, where people park cars for sale and where the employees park. It's the same place you dump a hot car, because at big shopping centers, there are cars sitting in back lots 24 hours a day. You won't have a patrol car turning in at midnight and finding one lone car sitting on 20 acres of asphalt. The other reason that the back lot was our best shot at finding the tag is that was practically our only shot. Employees generally show up with the same car every day. If it had been a shopper's car that he stole off of, we could look all over South Mississippi and still not find it.
Yeah, just like looking for a Stratus in a haystack.
Across the table, Sonny was having an aha moment.
You found the tag and then you checked the inspection sticker.
Right. You win the prize. The Buick was sitting there with a Louisiana tag on its butt and a current Mississippi inspection sticker on the windshield. Bingo.
So how did you guys learn how to do all this stuff? I didn't see any how to find stolen car tags in my class catalog.
Big John, of course. Vera and I worked repo and vehicle recovery through a chunk of the Reagan recession. You do it enough, it becomes second nature. Oh, by the way, Ronald Reagan was a president of the United States of America back in the last millennium. Narlene turned to Vera, then asked,
Would you mind giving him a dope slap for me when he's least expecting it? Why, of course, dear.
As we were settling the check, Vera announced that she had caught up on her paperwork and was running away from her store for the rest of the week.
George can run the damn thing better than I can anyway. And I truly do need a break from Gigi. That man has called me every 30 minutes today.
Are you giving George the manager's cut?
You're giving it to Gojo, aren't you?
I'm not saying they don't deserve it. I'm just trying to calculate the loan amount I'm going to have to go borrow from the sharks down at the First National Aquarium to pay for this case of mine.
No use fretting about it now. You know what Big John would say.
Yeah, I do. Experience is always cheaper than a funeral.
That too. But I was thinking about, you make yourself a big pot of bad chop suey, ain't nothing to do but eat your way out of it.
As we walked out into the sun, I turned to Vera. We need another team member. Why don't you go grab your field glasses, and we'll leave your car here. I think it's time to go birding. On the way to the car, I saw that Narlene was heading in the wrong direction. Old Blue is generally hard to lose in any parking lot. I opened my mouth to call out to her and then realized that she veered off to check the tags on a Stratus. She might complain a bit, but her head was definitely in the game. We went back to the Westlake Shopping Center. I still couldn't quite shake the idea that the car dumping location and the foot trail leading to Landis Grantham's house might not be just coincidence. The Piney Woods Boy Scouts and the Youth Conservation Corps blazed the Arnold Line Trail 30 years ago. It got its name because it largely followed the path of the old Arnold Dummy Line, a narrow-gauge railroad spur that was used to log the virgin longleaf pine stands that dominated this part of Mississippi at the dawn of the 20th century. We took turns leapfrogging along the trail. Two of us would walk along the trail where it came close to a street, then switch off until the next street. Since Vera and I knew the trail, one of us always walked with another partner. Sonny and I took the first leg and found nothing but a hermit thrush fresh from the north and a beautiful copperhead. As we approached the Lamar Park subdivision, we could see Old Blue's battered skin twinkling ahead of us. The walking was feeling good, so I volunteered to take the next leg and switch Sonny for Narlene. As we started out, Narlene asked,
Just what are we looking for?
I truly don't know. Maybe an abandoned bike? Even a four-wheeler that he could have used to get back and forth. Bloody clothing? Any clothing at all? A pile of Pringles cans? You know, the usual.
Oh, I see now. We're looking for detective-type evidence. Sonny's looking pretty wobbly, isn't he?
He's doing okay, but I think he's pissed that he's not back up to Wushu lightning speed. Remember, this is really his first day back on his feet. and he kept up with me without any problem.
That's because you are the slowest walking man alive, Jonathan. Sometimes I just can't believe your name is Speed.
Hey, not all of us were blessed with 6-foot-long legs like you and Goat are. Anyway, slow is good. Slow is careful. The slow birder finds the bird. And maybe the detective-type evidence.
Is that a Big John Turnerism?
No, I don't think Big John would be caught dead saying detective-type evidence. The second leg was as free of any detective-type evidence as the first. I was beginning to doubt my own savant detecting ability as the afternoon wore on. While Sonny and Vera walked leg number 3, Narlene and I drove through the quiet streets of Lamar Park looking for the next local connection to the trail. We found it at the back of the small county park that gave the neighborhood its name. We pulled up to the parking area that flanked the park's walking track and walked across the road to the trailhead. "I'll be damned," I said, a little bit more loudly than I realized. I turned to Narlene and found her crouched and scanning the thick brush. She relaxed when she heard me chuckle. "At ease, Rap. No wild boars this time, but it looks like your environmental lesson with Ragonet may be losing some of its effectiveness." I pointed toward the 2 pizza-flavored Pringles cans lying on top of a pile of trash across a drying water puddle from us. We started around the puddle when I noticed the fresh tire tracks coming out of it. I motioned Narlene to stop. "Let's get Butch and Eaton out here before we go any closer. See those tire tracks? Someone parked here in the mud puddle instead of parking across the street, the walking track, or over here on the gravel. Why would they do that?" She looked at the scene and said at once,
"If they parked in the mud puddle, they'd be hidden from the road by these bushes."
"And why would they want to be hidden?"
"Drug deal."
"Oh, you are indeed a child of Crosstown. I was thinking of what we old farts called parking. I can tell you for a fact that this mud puddle is more than 25 years old." She made a play of looking puzzled and then said,
"Oh, you mean sex. I get it. Did people really have sex 25 years ago, Jonathan?"
"I know, it's hard to believe, isn't it? I'm also thinking that Ragonet could have parked the Stratus here and ate Pringles until it was time to walk down the power line to the back of Landis Grantham's house. It's not more than 2 long city blocks from here, I imagine." We had been waiting for Butch and Eaton about 15 minutes when 2 loud whistle blasts silenced the birds. Narlene looked around.
"What's that?"
"Vera's emergency whistle, but don't worry. 2 blasts just means come here. They probably found something. Let's go see."
"I can wait here for Officer Ellis."
"No. Haven't you ever seen a horror film, Narlene? No splitting up. We both go, and Butch can figure out what to do when he gets here. He's a big boy." We met Vera less than 100 yards down the trail. As we reached her, Narlene said in an exaggerated whisper,
"They split up."
Vera looked puzzled, but announced,
"We found a gun in the path. Sonny's guarding it."
"In the path?"
"Yep. Lying right in the edge of the path. Plain sight."
"What kind of gun?"
"Now, Johnny, I know about as much about handguns as you do about milling wheat."
"Humor me, dear."
"Well, it's a small caliber, probably a .22. Semi-automatic, not a revolver. It's not a Walther, Ruger, or Beretta. And it's not a Saturday Night Special by a long stretch. It probably costs between $1,500 and $2,000 before customizing. The Burl Maple hand grip alone will cost more than most pistols you see around here. It is a mighty pretty piece of steel to be leaving out in the weather. If I were to guess, and mind you, that's all I'm doing, I would guess that it's either a Sig Sauer or a Smith & Wesson Target model."
Darlene turned to me and asked incredulously,
"You grind your own flour, Jonathan?"
"No, of course not, but I have been looking at home grain mills lately. Just in case, you know." I turned to Vera. "Honey, we think we found where Ragonet parked before going to kill Landis. Butch and Eaton are on their way. Will you go back with Miss Sarcasm here and meet them? I'll go on and chase the creature from the Black Lagoon away from Sonny. And remember, don't split up." I found Sonny sitting on his folded legs about 10 feet from a beautiful target pistol that was indeed lying in the path. I called out as I approached, "Well, what kind of gun is it?"
"It's the shiny silver kind with the pretty wood on the handle."
"Oh, I see we've got an expert." I punched up Butch on my cell phone, and he answered, complaining,
"Speedy, hold your horses. You know some of us have real jobs. We'll be there in 5 minutes."
"Take your time, Butch. We haven't got anything better to do than lie around and enjoy the sunshine. Listen, are you still monitoring the tip line?"
"Yep, all week. You call in the tip and I get paged."
"Great. You're about to get an anonymous tip that someone has found a pistol lying in the Ardeline Trail."
"Now you're talking, Speedy. We're just turning into Lamar Park."
"Good. Narlene and Vera will meet you at the trailhead. See you soon." Butch left Eaton guarding the mud puddle, and soon arrived with Narlene, who wanted to see the gun, and Vera, who wasn't about to get left making small talk with Eaton. As he crouched over the gun, he whistled. "Damn, Vera. You were right on. A Sig Sauer 22 target pistol. Hot rodded to hell and back. I didn't know you were a handgun shooter."
"I'm not, Butch. I picked up the handgun stuff doing research for Big John. If I shoot at you, it's liable to be with my 12-gauge pump."
"I'll keep that under advisement, ma'am." He turned to me. "Speedy, I see you just couldn't let the hiking trail theory alone. I admit you've done some detecting today, but you've screwed yourself while doing it. You see that, don't you?"
"Well, Butch, I have noticed some minor inconsistencies, but I'm still happy with my basic premise. Latimer Grantham paid Ray Raginet to kill his brother, Landis Grantham."
"Well, at least you're more succinct than you were last night. But leaving out the still-missing motive, why would Raginet park back at the walking track, walk down to Grantham's property, kill him, then tote the murder weapon past the parked car way down here, then throw it on the ground in plain sight? You got that figured out, Miss Fletcher?"
"Enough already with the Jessica jokes. But now that you mention it, young man, I do have a theory that fits the evidence we found today." I closed my eyes and tried to straighten out all the strands of a narrative. "Okay. Raginet gets to town and spends his day smoking ice and crunching Pringles. I think that Latimer told him to park at the Westlake Shopping Center and to walk the trail to Landis's. By the way, the distance is not 3 miles, less than 2. We've walked most of it this afternoon. I figure that Ray can't help but do some scouting. He comes and pokes around the neighborhood, and he finds the little parking spot at the trailhead. He's from down below Venice, where any land at all is wetland. He probably didn't even notice the mud puddle. So he goes back and parks the Chevy, walks over to the movie theater, maybe even takes in a matinee. Comes out after dark, picks him a nice Stratus. He goes back to Westlake, switches the plates, drives down here to the trailhead, and smokes ice and crunches Pringles until midnight. He strolls down the trail to Landis's, pops him and heads back. He either hangs on to the gun, waiting until he can chunk it in a creek, or he likes it so much that he plans to hang on to it. Okay, it's dark. He's wired to the gills, nauseous from eating Pringles on top of the speed. He's nervous. After all, he just committed a murder. He walks back toward the car a hell of a lot faster than he came down it, and he overshoots the path to the trailhead in the dark. He realizes what he's done and heads back. Maybe he's got a little fear on top of the nerves by now. While he's trotting back down the path toward where he just killed Landis, he hears something, or sees something, and panics. He's probably holding the gun out in front of him the whole time. He stumbles and loses the gun. In the dark, he can't find it quickly, and he's way too spooked to look carefully. He makes it back to the car and hightails it to the French Quarter. How's that, sports fans?
Speedy, I doubt anybody ever accused you of not having a vivid imagination.
See any holes?
Speedy, you are way out on several limbs, but the story is plausible.
Sonny had been standing by quietly the whole time and finally spoke up.
I just can't see Raginet having a fancy gun like this. Maybe it doesn't have anything to do with the murder.
Good point, Mr. Richard.
Sonny.
Butch nodded.
Good point, Sonny. After all, this is South Mississippi, and stolen handguns are not uncommon items. But that's a special handle on this gun. That's Howard Burke's work, for sure. Howard is a retired highway patrolman and a former national handgun champion. I'll tell you another thing that I'd forgotten until I walked up here and saw that gun. Back in Howard's heyday, when he was going all over the country to competitions, Latimer Grantham was on the local shooting team. I may be wrong, but I think Latimer always shot SIGs. Johnny Speed, I think you might just be barking up the right tree for a change.
I was trying to get ahead of the curve now. I imagine that we'll find out that Latimer gave his brother a genuine Howard Burks target pistol as a present somewhere along the way. Want a bet?
I owe you too many donuts already. I'll pass.
His voice turned serious.
Speedy, you know this gun means that Eaton and I are not just looking for a stolen Stratus anymore. We're about to deal ourselves into the real investigation. I need you and your irregulars to shut down. Now, before you get up in my face here, Speedy, we both appreciate what you've done.
Calm down, Butch. I agree. We'll cease and desist. He gave me a sidelong, suspicious look. Behind him, both Narlene's and Sonny's eyes were bulging in surprise. Vera quickly turned to hide her expression from Butch. It took a great deal of control to continue talking without laughing. We'll let you and Eaton do your jobs, and we'll organize the evidence we've collected. In fact, I'm thinking Vera and I need to leave town for a couple of days, just to avoid Latimer and his efforts to validate his alibi. Butch just stared at me mutely. Butch, it's no trick. Look, I've got a free luxury suite at the swankiest hotel in the quarter from now until Monday. I'm scared of going through the front door of my own house because I'm afraid of walking in on Latimer tearing the place apart looking for my pictures. I'm talking about a probable brother killer who you've just informed me is an expert marksman. You've got a handle on the investigation. It's time for me to punt. Gojo will know where I am. You can pick up those files and CDs we talked about from him tomorrow morning. My cell will be on if you need me. Butch finally found his voice.
Speedy, you be careful down there.
We left him standing guard over the pistol, still wondering what I was up to. Back at the trailhead, Eaton, wearing bright yellow latex gloves, was sorting through the trash with a pair of barbecue tongs and arranging it in a sort of exploded view of a Mississippi roadside trash pile. I called out as we approached. Eaton, I didn't know you were an artist. I was astonished when he smiled at me.
I think I'll take that as a compliment. Thanks, Speed. I hear that you're going to lie low for a while.
You've talked to Butch. That's why you're in such a good mood.
Yes, I just heard your murder scenario, too. I nearly laughed my full head off.
Glad to lighten your day, Eaton. Does this look like it's going anywhere?
Maybe, maybe not. This top layer of my pyramid here is stuff that I think was tossed out after Tuesday's rain. This includes the Pringles cans, the box from a 12-pack of vanilla Pepsi, and 10 of those cans. None of them in the box, of course. There are also some gas card receipts and other bits of paper that are dry. The tire tracks are another story. Ragnit may have parked the Stratus here, but if he did, the tracks have been obliterated by another vehicle with wide track, high-performance tires, a sports car, or maybe a street ride pickup.
Latimer's driving a Porsche 911, and Lily's got a new Jag.
Really? That makes things a bit more interesting. By the way, Speed, I appreciate you helping Butch like this. He's taking this whole turf battle hard.
Don't think anything of it, Eaton. After all, you two are our neighborhood team. You may be real sons of bitches, but you're our sons of bitches. And don't worry. I'm sure I'll be back to annoying the hell out of you by next week, or the week after at the latest.
Yeah, I believe that. Come to think of it, you're getting more and more annoying by the minute. Y'all be careful down there in New Orleans now.
As soon as we got in the old blue, Vera, Narlene, and Sonny all pulled out cell phones and started thumbing through call lists like crazy. While they touched bases and made the mundane arrangements that are necessary for the movements of any fighting force, I headed over to Lake Shady to check out the fishing expedition. We came in the back end of the development and pulled around to the boat ramp closest to Latimer's house. There they were, just where they said they would be. And as predicted, the lake's boats had begun to gravitate toward Latimer's Peninsula. I pulled out my binocs just in time to see Gojo pull in a 3-pound bass. When the two guys had admired and then released their catch, I called Gojo's number. Hey, I thought you guys were supposed to be fishing, not petting the fish. You just let my supper go. Gojo scanned the lake and spotted me before answering.
You saw that bass? That thing must have weighed 5 pounds.
Thus started the inexorable gain in weight that every released fish goes through. This one surely could gain another 2 or 3 pounds before the next day. Okay, I see that you can fish. Can you snoop?
Oh, sure. Burker's already broken into their network and grabbed everything that they have on 2 computers. Slick, see?
Good. So why are you still hanging around? There was an awkward silence then.
Well, is to see. We figured that it would look suspicious if we left early, you know. Besides, we might still get some new stuff after the show, right?
I always knew you two were dedicated workers. Listen, Vera, Narlene, Sonny, and I are headed for New Orleans. We're going to try and find Ragnet down there. We're planning on getting back tomorrow afternoon or Saturday morning. You've got the comm, Gojo. Give me a call as soon as you guys get home and safe.
Right. You guys be careful down there, see?
I snapped my cell shut, muttering to myself, why does everybody say that?
You have been listening to Serve It Cold by Ronnie Blackwell, starring Eric Rowe and Beth Wojcicki. Diverse parts by Roger Johnson, Mike Wynn, Martha Holloway, Paul Fisher, and Julia Holloway. Theme song, Where Is the Love by Michelle Malone. You can find out more about her and her music at www.michellemalone.com. Artwork, courtesy of Georgia Godwin and Laura Mann. Serve It Cold is a free audiobook available at dancingcatstudios.com. This and many other fine works are also available at patiobooks.com. For a print or ebook version of the book, visit ronnieblackwell.com or search for it by name at lulu.com. Dancing Cat Studios produces full cast dramatizations of novel length fiction. We'd love to hear from you. You can shoot us questions and comments by email at dancingcatstudios@gmail.com or start some wild speculation about your favorite episodes at our website, dancingcatstudios.com, or just pick up the phone and give us a call at 206-350-7613. Serve It Cold is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 U.S. license. A copy of this license is available at creativecommons.org. Ronnie would be delighted for you to share episodes of this work as often as you like, with as many people as you like, provided, of course, that you give credit where credit is due, you do not charge any fee, you do not use any part of an episode to create something new, and you only copy episodes in their entirety. Some sound effects are courtesy of the Free Sound Project. Direct links and complete credits can be found at dancingcatstudios.com.